You're listening to the new Duncan Trussell Family Eye Podcast, presented to you by the fine people at Gersten and Spade Associates. We're the number one hedge fund firm. There's anyone at all. Doesn't even matter wherever you're at, whoever you are. Make you fucking rip. Now let's listen to this great podcast.
I wanna be rich, Harrison Bank, bitch. Bank account stinks and I need to find a new hitch. Credit down, credit fucking way down, cause I like to fill my arm up with that sweet brown. I need a loan, I need a bone thrown to me, so I can get more smack and put it inside of me. Garrison Bank, doesn't matter what your credit score is.
If you've got functional kidneys, you will get a loan from Garrison Bank, guaranteed.
Gary been drinking the moonshine, seeing the orbs at night up in the night sky, hearing the message of peace that they gave to him. Didn't know he'd been blind till he saw the light. Gary called back to our trailer, told me that his new name was Lazarus, and he'd been reborn in the flood of the blood that the orbs sprayed. Light beams were shining all around him. He was reborn, resurrected. Said it was a dream when I saw him turn salt into ketamine. Said that I was high when I saw him bring a dead bird back to life. And I watched it fly. Said that I was high, just high. He would baptize the people down by the creek where we used stuff painted into it. Pits baptized the people, healed the sick, and many came for his teaching. Blessed are the gamers, blessed are the losers, blessed are the ones who don't go to class and smoke grass. Blessed are the vapors, blessed are the ones who shoplift D&D books. He said it was a dream when I saw him turn salt into ketamine. Said that I was high when I saw him bring a dead bird back to life. And I watched it fly. Said I was high.
Greetings to you, my sweet friends. It is I, D. Trussell, and this is the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast. A weird announcement. Let me preface it by saying I'm totally fine, but a couple of days ago, sorry if this is too much information, friends, took the youngest to get a haircut. Haircuts are scary. They're scary for adults, but I mean, imagine being a kid, scissors, people you've never met. And, I had to piss, and I couldn't go to the bathroom because I didn't want to abandon my child with strangers with scissors cutting his hair. So I held it. This is way too much information. Went to the bathroom later, and man, my kidneys fucking hurt. Never happened before. Didn't happen again. So I went to an urgent care, and my fucking blood sugar was so high that the machine they used to check it couldn't even register it. It just said high. That's how high it was. As it turns out, It was 540. I had sugar in my piss. And so as it turns out, daddy's got the sugars. I got diabetes. And so I've gone off the sugar for a little over 48 hours now and started taking metformin, which is this diabetes medication. And my blood sugar has just dropped almost to what the doctor said I need to keep it at. And so it sucks, obviously, but oh my God, I feel reborn. Like, I feel like a new person. I've been going around with like doom level blood sugar. And I guess I was just writing it off as old age or something. All these symptoms I was having, everything makes sense now. It's like, it was all diabetes. It was all blood sugar. It's crazy how much it fucked me up. And I guess it's like such a slow boil that you kind of get used to, like having to take naps after you eat, pissing nonstop. It wasn't all horrible. My penis, like a side effect of diabetes, my penis is huge now. It grew and grew and grew. And that was the sign that I should have really noticed. But I just thought, man, this is awesome. It must be because I've been doing push-ups more. They also tested my IQ at the urgent care and said that I have the highest IQ of anyone they've encountered. And in all databases across the planet, I don't want to do like a brag or anything, because we all have good things about us and challenges. But yeah, the other thing I found out is not only is my blood sugar super high, my IQ is super high as well. In fact, it matches my blood sugar, which is 540, which is really a weird coincidence. The lady at the urgent care said right before she measured my penis. Anyway, I feel great. Get your blood sugar checked. Don't do what I did. Don't wallow in your blood sugar. Don't boil your organs in sugar. I'm lucky. They tested my kidneys. That's fine. Going in a month to find out what part of my body has been fried out by sugar. But so far, it looks good. Blood sugar dropping. I feel fucking great. And I can't believe it. It's like an awful spell is lifted off of me. And also, friends, I sugar binge. So don't worry. I'm not trying to make you paranoid or anything. Like, I have diabetes because of a lifetime love affair with sweet things. Oreos, M&Ms, you name it. Frederick's Monkey Bars. I would eat six of those a night. I would go, there was a chocolate cafe right down the street, chocolate baths. I would take chocolate baths, snort chocolate dust, wrap myself up in chocolate. I had a chocolate blanket for the longest time, but I ate it, and they're hard to find. So that's my big news for you, friends. I got the sugars. I got diabetes. All the fucking commercials I used to make fun of on Fox News, I can no longer make fun of, because now I have to think about my A1C, and it sucks. Boy, did I judge those commercials. I would watch them and laugh my ass off and be like, what's a fucking A1C? What's wrong with these old people so obsessed with their A1C? Now I know A1C is the measurement of your blood sugar over 3 months. And mine was so fucking high that they could have used me as a sugar bomb. They could have put dynamite in my asshole and thrown me into a trench, and I would have exploded the trench with flammable sugar. I was off the fucking charts. But now, oh my God, I'm sleeping all night. I'm not getting up to piss every hour. I'm a dummy. I just can't ignore stuff like that. And I'm really good at ignoring it, finding out about it, and then lecturing people that they shouldn't ignore it in the same way other people would tell me, you know, it's not normal that your piss foams like a bubble bath when you piss. You know, that's weird. No, I'm just getting old, man. You know, I'm 49. That's what happens when you get old. Your piss foams. You got to get up and piss every hour. Your dick gets bigger and your IQ just explodes. So anyway, the good news is I caught it. That's the good news. You know, if you don't, they call it the silent killer. And yeah, if you don't catch it, man, you just fucking keel over. You're just walking through Disneyland, keel the fuck over. So That's the only way. And it's weird that that's the only place that diabetics die is Disneyland. I don't understand that. But, and you could ask yourself, well, if you have diabetes, then rather than alter your diet, why don't you just avoid Disneyland? And my response to that would be, go fuck yourself. You think I'm going to never visit the Magic Kingdom again? A place of such fun, imagination? No, I'll always go back there. So because I want to go back to Disneyland, I've got to stop eating sugar, refined sugar, carbs, booze, everything. And you know what? Now, 48 hours in with some diabetes meds in me, feeling like some kind of god on earth, which I guess is all of you non-diabetics' baseline fucking experience. Oh my god. Oh my god. Like, no mood swings. It's incredible. No weird fucking mood swings. No hyper morning irritation. No eating a pancake and taking a 2-hour nap. It's amazing. Everyone, you know, I mentioned, there's this thing, people feel weird about announcing whatever their new disease may be, because they feel like, especially diabetes, because there's a lot of stigma attached to it. It's like VD, but from sugar, and bad choices. But fuck, man, I mean, why? I'm not gonna hide it. I have to always tell you guys everything. I got diabetes. So here's the summary. I've got diabetes. My blood sugar's already gone down, staying down. Thank you, Jesus. I have one of these machines. I've got a AccuCheck guide. You can just buy these at the grocery store. It's so cool. I wish I'd known that sooner. But I got to prick my fucking finger. And they have the finger prick technology. Oh my God. It's like unimaginably advanced. I've got this little pin and it jabs a needle into my finger. You barely feel it. Blood comes out. Anyway, summary. Diabetes, blood sugar is going down, massive penis, very high IQ that matches both my blood sugar when I went into the urgent care and how many inches my penis is. All of them over 500. Today's guest is an esteemed guest indeed. For this man is partially responsible for the Midnight Gospel. He, along with his wonderful wife, Shannon, run Titmouse, which is an animation studio, the animation studio that produced the Midnight Gospel. So I spent a wild year with this man, and what a wonderful person he is, and a brilliant person, and my God, he has put together the most incredible production company out there for animation. His team is the best, and the combination of Chris, Shannon, Pendleton, Mike Mayfield, and Jesse Moynihan, and all the amazing animators and writers and artists that put their blood, sweat, and tears into the Midnight Gospel all happened under the banner of Titmouse. And if you liked the Midnight Gospel, then that means you like Titmouse. And if you like Titmouse, who have created many a famous series like Big Mouth, then you need to check out this new series on Max, formerly HBO. It's called Scavenger's Reign. This is an instant favorite of mine. It is exactly the kind of animation I like. I'm an oldie with diabetes, so why would you even listen to my old sugar-coated ass? But I gotta tell you, man, this is incredible animation and an amazing story. It kind of distantly has that mysterious Aeon Flux feel to it, if you can remember that. It's just a beautiful, beautiful story. And it's on Max now, so check it out. You will love it. You will be doing Titmouse a favor, but most importantly, you'll be doing yourself a favor because you will plunge into a beautiful, psychedelic, mysterious sci-fi world that is insane animation. Beautiful, trippy, wonderful animation. Please check it out. It's on Max. If you're listening to this Thursday, November 9th. New episode is out tonight. Very exciting. All right, everybody. Oh, yeah, before I forget, Salt Lake City, friends, is coming up. I'm doing Salt Lake City, Utah, at Wise Guys. We sold out the whole weekend, but fear not. I've added a show on the 19th. So if you were not able to get tickets for Wise Guys, Salt Lake City, we've added a show on the 19th. It's on the Wise Guys website. It will be up on my website soon. I hope that you will come and see me. And then after that, I'm going on vacation, but I'll be back at the Comedy Zone in Charlotte, NC on the 14th of December. So won't you come out and see me there, please? Then it's Christmas. Thank you, Jesus. And then after that, I've got many more dates coming up. The Denver Comedy Works on the 11th of January. You can find all these dates at DuncanTrussell.com. Subscribe to my Patreon. It's patreon.com/DTFH. And now, everyone, please welcome Chris Pranowski to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast. Why did I just say the name of my own podcast in the intro? Here he is. Welcome to the DTFH. It is so freaking cool. Can you tell everybody where we are right now?
We are out at Bugbear Canyon in Spicewood, Texas, outside. We're doing this podcast in the outdoors.
Yes.
On top of a cistern with, I don't even know how many, 30,000 gallons of rainwater.
30,000 gallons like that. Of rainwater.
It's a lot. I think it's 30,000. I don't know. It's a lot.
This is like, it feels so good to be out in nature, and it's so quiet. Like when you live in the city, you forget about this, which is how everything used to sound.
Yeah. You can see the stars at night. It's crazy how many stars there are.
Yeah. I saw you had a telescope in there. Do you pull that thing out much?
Yeah. I'll tell you what though. You'd think it took me fucking forever to find the moon. And the moon's the biggest object in the sky.
What do you mean?
So sensitive. You pointed at the moon. Also, part of it is having, at the time when we were using it a lot, my kid's 11 now.
Yeah.
When we were using it a lot, he was more like 7.
Yeah.
And a 7-year-old doesn't have the manual dexterity to really dial in like a little, like a millimeter.
Right.
And I'd finally find the moon and the kid's off playing. And then I'm like, I found the moon. Here, come look at the craters. And he'd come and bounce into it. And then it'd take me another 15, 20 minutes to find the moon.
Yes. And, you know. No, trying to be a good dad.
Yeah.
Order a microscope online. Opposite of a telescope. Same situation. I'm like, I build the microscope up to the kids. Like, oh, we're going to look at an ant head.
Yeah.
And yeah, same thing. Where is it? I can't find the fucking ant's head. Yeah. And then exactly the same thing. They come to look and bump the bump it. Then you're done. Do you know about the did you hear about, I don't remember, I think it's Nokia maybe. I don't remember which phone. You know the scam they did? You know about this?
I don't know about it.
So they, one of the selling points for one of their phones was it can zoom in on the moon, like real close to the moon.
Oh, yeah.
But what it was really doing was faking the moon. Like really? It would know you were pointing at the moon, and then it would just put in a fake fucking.
I bet it made a lot of people happy though.
Oh, I mean, everyone was like, oh my God, look at this. It's look how close you can see the moon through this phone. It's like, that's a JPEG, man. They just slid in there. So, you know, one thing that you're doing this weekend is actually kind of intimidating to me.
Yeah.
Which is, you are about to have a hardcore D&D campaign happen here on this beautiful property.
Yeah.
You have nine.
We're gonna play outside. In the outdoors, right here where we're sitting.
How long have you been playing Dungeons and Dragons?
I started playing when I was, I think, 9 or 10. Because my friend's older brother played. And I think that was really the only way to get into it when you're that age. Because I remember my parents had gotten me like the set or something, like a year before I started playing, I couldn't figure it out. There was no YouTube videos to watch.
Right.
You just were like, there's a lot of cool looking monsters, but there's all these numbers next to them. I don't know what this means. I want to learn. I don't know. I would just draw the monsters. That was my extent of it. And then my friend was like, yo, my older brother's playing. And then we played once with him. And then my friend, Andy German, he became the DM of our little group for a while and like showed us how. And then we kind of like, unlike a lot of other, Dungeon Master is DM, by the way.
Yeah.
Now I get confused when people say, hey, can I DM you? I'm like, you want to Dungeon Master me? And it's like, no, that means something else. No, that's not what it means. Does is Dungeon Master is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And then we didn't realize that there was supposed to be a regular Dungeon Master because there's no information about this stuff. And we would not, and also that you're supposed to prepare. And we would just, when I was in fourth grade or whatever, we just every day after school go to my friend's kitchen and we would just take turns being the Dungeon Master and nobody would read ahead. You'd read it in real time.
Oh, yeah.
There was no preparation. It was new to the Dungeon Master just as it was to the players. Totally not the way you're supposed to do it. But it was so cool. I wish I could recreate that. Now I think as adults, I have a paranoia of I have to be prepared. Like, you know, I've been in too many situations where I like wasn't prepared. And it's like, you know, also our time is so precious when you're like, oh, like I'm 50. I just turned 52. So I'm 50. I was going to say 51, but I'm 52 now. And it's like, I'm a dad and I have a job. And it's like the precious time that you can gather your friends as adults with kids and lives and jobs. It's like, you want to be prepared. You don't want to fuck this up. You didn't care when you were 10 or 11 and you're doing this.
No time
was precious. You really did have all the time in the world. It seemed like it, at least.
And you're really prepping. Tell everybody what's on your hands right now.
Yeah, I got like spray paint and paint because I was painting up these 2-foot by 4-foot boards to put my terrain on that I had shipped out here. Because I was like, you know, my D&D stuff is not here. So I had to have it shipped in a box.
Shipped out.
Yeah.
Do you have like a favorite set of diet that you use?
You know, I used to when I was a kid, and now it's just I don't. Also, they're so available now. It used to be you had to like go. I remember when I was a kid, I was saving up for this pair of like, I can't remember if this brand existed. I'm trying to think if they were Chessex. They might have been, if that they're similar to what they look like now. Whatever brand this was, I don't know if that brand existed in the 80s, but when I got them in the 80s, man, you had to save up for them, and then you would go to like the little hobby shop that the old ladies ran like on the main street.
Yeah.
I grew up in New Jersey, close to, I was born in Trenton, and then we moved out to like a suburb of Trenton.
Yeah.
And then you'd look in a catalog, and then you'd order them, and you'd wait for like a month for these dice to show up, and then you had to put in, there was a little like waxy crayon that you had to like put the numbers, you would like
what
you would like put the color in the numbers by yourself. You would scoop, I don't even know how to describe it. They were debossed, you know, which is the opposite of embossed. So there's a little gutter with the numbers, and then you'd rub wax into there so you could see the numbers and wipe it off with a cloth. So it was a whole process. Now it's so easy to get dice. You go on Etsy, you go on Amazon. There's a thousand ways you can get dice. They come, you don't got to put the numbers in. If you order on Amazon, sometimes it can come to you the same day. There's nothing precious about these dice now.
But this is one aspect of D&D that I don't know. I imagine most people understand Dungeons and Dragons. They have some like rough idea of what it is if they haven't played, because it's been, you know, it's a staple. It's a cultural staple. Yeah. But I don't think people understand the craftsmanship involved in like making a good campaign. I mean, not just the prep, not just like knowing the story backwards and forwards, but when you go deep, that's when you're painting those figurines.
Yeah, it's a weird type of storytelling too, because if you come from linear, like I do, of like a scripted making cartoons and stuff, it's like you write these pages or you storyboard these pages, and there's a beginning, middle, and end, and it's set and it's timed and it's for your audience to enjoy in the way that you've presented it to them.
Right.
When you're a dungeon master, anything can happen. Your audience influences the story. They have an incredible amount of agency as to where the story goes. And you can't You can't predict that. You can never predict whatever you. That's one thing that you could predict is whatever you predict right. is not going to be what they do.
Yeah. Right?
So you have to have a bunch of. It's almost like writing, you know, a multi. It's like a multiverse. It's like you know, you're the little inception point in the Big Bang. And as every branch goes forward with its infinite possibilities, you've got to predict a certain amount, you know, 5, 6, 7 of the main branches, and then hope you have something to do. And if not, you're improvising from there on out.
Whoa.
But you gotta know your world a little bit. You gotta figure it out.
What?
I don't even know what we're gonna be talking about, but I like it.
Oh,
I like it.
Yeah, man. Oh yeah, well, podcasting for sure. No, better to have no plan. Okay, so there's a Christian, I don't remember which verse it is or which book of the Bible it says, where three or more of you are gathered, there I will be.
Yeah.
And Fritz Perls, who is like, you know who that is, Fritz Perls?
I do not.
Very interesting psychologist, came up with this thing called like group therapy.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had this idea of the gestalt. And basically he would say, you know, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. So in group therapy, some spirit enters the room that is something from the collaboration of people. Yeah. And in D&D, I think this is what they don't capture. Yeah. You can't capture it in Stranger Things. You can't capture it.
You can't.
But what do you think? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do. Do you remember how we met?
Yeah, we played D&D at Penn's house.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that was, do you remember who else played?
I just remember you, me, and Penn, but I can't remember who else.
Jesse Moynihan.
Oh, Jesse, that's right.
And I think, in a way, unconsciously or not, I don't know how, if this was planned or not, but I think, you know, our mutual friend Penn is such a intuitive and gentle soul.
Yeah.
And he wants everyone to get along. And I think, in a way, whether he knew it was going to lead down the path that it ended up leading, I think he wanted to see how we all interacted. I don't know if this was his plan. I've never talked to him about this. But we all ended up making a TV show together years later. Like, because that was like a decade ago that we played that D&D game.
Mind-blown emoji.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
I feel
shit.
Like that was the thing. Because I remember you, I was really impressed with the way that you played your character. You had a little, like, Quato kind of guy that was like attached to your abdomen or something, or maybe it was in a little bag. I don't remember.
Exactly. Let me just tell you this: I was so nervous to play with you and Penn and Jesse because I like felt so intimidated and like I hadn't played D&D since you know I was a kid and just so nervous. But that's wild, man.
And do you remember what we did after we played D&D?
No.
He was like one of the first guys to get the Oculus, and we all tried the VR
thing. Oh, yeah.
But then we made a show about a guy like going into different VR things together.
I feel like that was
a weird, like, deep inception point, whether it was like conscious or not.
Well, it was I love this. I don't know if you've heard about this, like the shit they're doing now with quantum computing and like this weird idea of how like time isn't linear. It can ripple backwards too.
Yeah,
it was like a little backwards, like
that's
ripple.
Backwards. We were in a backwards timeline on that one.
Yeah.
We already knew each other. We had already made the show together.
Oh man!
And we were backwards looping it.
But that's so wild. I never put it together. Well, you know, it kind of reminds me. I think Google will like if they're going to hire like an executive, a CEO, they take them to Burning Man.
Really?
It's a vetting process to see like, all right, what are you like out in the middle of nowhere on a bunch of acid? Like, let's see what you're like now. I'm working before we hire you. And you learn.
I bet you do learn a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, you do. I'm sure you do. You learn a lot. But I'm curious though, like the times I've played D&D, when I don't know why I'm nervous about playing D&D. It's very odd, but when I've been absorbed into it.
Yeah.
And this, I don't, like, something comes into the room. There is a, and it's beautiful. Yeah. It's definitely not Jesus.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's archetypical or something.
Yeah.
That everything becomes weirdly ritualistic.
Yeah.
Which is why the dice when people get deep into it, because these are the implements of the ritual, so they have this magical quality.
It's one of the reasons that I like, when possible, to play in person. Something happened over the pandemic where online play became the norm, and that became like a thing that I did a lot, and it's still fun, but there's something different about it. It's still cool, but like, you don't feel as connected. You don't feel like that presence has entered the room as much, because there's no room.
That is for sure an unquantifiable loss. That I'm all for remote working. It sucks commuting and shit and all that, but I don't think we could have made the Midnight Gospel if we had all been working remotely. It wouldn't have been the same.
We wrapped that up right before it happened. I remember that thing premiered a month into the lockdown. It was on 420. I remember that was our premiere.
I know.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's also interesting. That was probably a backwards time loop too, because every episode was a different apocalypse.
We
were living through an apocalypse.
All the messages I've gotten about it, somehow no one has ever mentioned that the first episode was about a zombie plague with antidotes and facts, shots and stuff. And I was certain, when the pandemic happened, and I was certain, I was excited for someone to be like, predictive programming. That's predictive programming. They knew it was the Illuminati. Nobody caught that. And it wasn't predictive programming, but it.
Well, but maybe it was if we're in a backwards time loop.
Right.
If we were because I remember those. It was one of the more interesting writer's room scenarios, because you had the material recorded, but we had to figure out a way to make it work as episodes. And, pulling from people that you knew and people that Penn knew, I thought it was really interesting. And one of the things that stuck with me, I actually brought her into a future writer's room, was, I forget her name, was the one.
Maja Diet.
Yes, ooh. I brought her into another writer's room in the future.
Cool.
Because she told us about how she was visited by an angel, and that angel told her how the apocalypse would happen. And it was how, if you are a yogi, or someone who is very heavily a shaman, or someone who's very heavily practiced in being able to look outside of your aura, you can see what the world really looks like, right? But most people can't do that shit, right? They don't even know they are looking at the world through an aura, right?
Right.
But she's like, what's going to happen? This angel says, check it out. It's not really, it's the inciting incident. It's not the apocalypse, but there's going to be an event that causes everybody's aura to drop at the same time.
Woo!
And what everybody is going to see is the real world as they've never seen it, as it's not filtered through your personal aura. Whoa. And it's going to be terrifying, and all these guys that are in charge of starting wars and stuff are gonna start shooting bombs and getting all bananas, because they're like, well, this is fucked up. It's really just what's here all the time,
right?
But you're not seeing it. And that stuck with me. And then when we were working on this other project that involved ghosts and shit, I was like, well, we're definitely gonna bring her in. But I lost my train of thought. That writer's room, that's what it was. You had two witches in there.
That's right.
And I remember the one guy liked to be referred to
Jason Louvre.
Yeah. He was in a different kind of sect,
Jason,
or a different Lube thing.
Is not, he does ceremonial magic, and he's a scholar.
They weren't aligned in their type of witchcraft, right?
No, completely. Different. I think he, forgive me, Jason, if you're listening, we're friends, we're an idiot.
Yeah.
But it's like,
I'm the idiot. He's explaining it to me.
I think it's like Enochian magic, whereas she's doing Wiccan or goddess stuff. There's so many branches of magic out there, man.
It's like any other religion or any other anything that you have.
what you just said regarding the auras.
Yeah.
So in near-death experiences,
yeah,
the reports that people give when they come out of their body and they see their human body,
yeah,
is they don't recognize themselves.
Yeah, yeah, I believe it, yeah.
Because of probably just man, what
she said. I don't recognize myself when I see a picture of me on the internet. I'm like, I got that fat?
Is that, oh, God, yeah. Oh, dude, when I got pandemic fat, yeah, and like it's that slow creep of, yeah, yeah, that, yeah, fat creep, yeah, you don't even know it's, yeah, happening, yeah, 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 till, yeah, suddenly, yeah, you're like, oh shit, look at me. Yeah, I, you know, that I think it's that spirit that you encounter in a great D&D campaign or in a great collaboration,
yeah,
that fuels a lot of the paranoia out there regarding like how things are made, like, because there's a lot of the satanic panic with D&D.
Yeah, 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 for
it's
sure.
Like it cued in, it somehow is D&D satanic? Absolutely not.
Yeah, yeah.
But is it mystical? 100%.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. So many things are, though.
I know, but the when you, it's something about, like, with the Midnight Gospel, when I watched it,
yeah,
and saw all what came of the collaboration.
Yeah, yeah.
How there's you're in it,
yeah,
Penn's in it, Jesse, everyone's in it.
Yeah, yeah.
All the animators are in it, like, yeah, all their spirits infused it.
So much more so than any other show I've worked on, by the way, in the Penn's, like, prime directive of not only is it welcome to have the animators infuse, yes, their own personality into the scenes and the acting, but it was expected. It's, yeah, like, I don't want you to just follow what has been laid out for you. You take this and travel your own path. And anybody who said that in the past, any client, any director, any, yeah, show creator, any executive producer, any writer who said that in the past didn't mean it the way that Penn meant it.
Right.
And it's always a risk for an animator to go and perform without a net when you're asked to perform without a net.
Oh, right.
Because it's like animation takes a long time.
Yeah.
And it's like they've heard that before and they've been burned by it.
Yep.
When a show creator is like, do your thing. And then you spend a week animating 10 seconds and then you bring it back and then they're like, well, I said your thing, but really what I meant was my thing, but 1% different.
Yep.
Penn really meant it.
Yes.
He was like, bring yourself, put yourself into this show. And people did. Once they got past that first week, 2 weeks, they're like, oh, this guy means it. Like, he's not full of shit. He really, really means it.
I mean, I think he probably spent a lot of time,
yeah,
after Adventure Time,
yeah,
thinking about, like, what was brutal, no, about
he,
that.
I know he did, because he talked about it to me.
Yeah. You
know, he's like, this is what I want, because this is what I couldn't get. This is what I couldn't achieve. And there are super talented artists that worked on Adventure Time, but a lot of the animators, almost all the animation, the people who are doing the physical act of animation, you know, it's like different than the pre-production or the storyboard or the design. The actual drawings that make the characters move and act, for economic reasons, are usually, yeah, in Korea, and you have no direct communication with them. And there's a contract that's made with the overseas studios with this thing called exposure sheets that are like, you time out. It's like, this is when this action happens. This is when this guy raises his arm.
Yeah.
This is when he puts it down. And it really, it's a necessary thing, because it's like, it's a business, and the overseas studios couldn't operate if it was like, do whatever you want, because they would be redoing things all the time.
Right.
So the spontaneity is much harder to achieve when you're working with that system. The system that we use for Midnight Gospel was, and even though it was pre-pandemic, it wasn't like everybody was under that roof in Hollywood. Some people were in New York, some were in,
right,
Vancouver, somewhere in wherever,
yeah,
but it was still that shared vision of like, the individual people got to talk to Penn, and they got to talk to Mike Mayfield as well, our supervising director.
Amazing.
And
guy.
And get direct feedback and get encouragement. And it's like the thing, I still remember the thing that Penn distilled it down to into a moment when he was theorizing about what he wanted to see in the show, he's like, you know, when somebody's walking up steps in animation and they just walk up the steps and their feet land perfectly on every step and they're up the step. In this show, I want someone to for their foot to like slip off the step or do a misstep in a way that's very subtle and probably won't be noticed, but people will feel it.
Yep.
And it's like, that's great. Do we got to do that?
I feel like he innovated like a whole new genre or form of animation that I really hope gets adopted by more people, because that, you know, he like, well, not just him, it was everybody. But
it was a collaborative. He really invited a true collaborative effort in the way that it never happened.
That's it. With animation, and it's like, I heard that when you send it out to Korea or whatever, you get only like, what, two rounds of notes or three rounds?
You can tell them. You generally do three. You'll get a take one back, which is like the first pass, and then you'll do notes, and there'll be technical things that are like, well, this is not what the design looks like. You know, that's a technical retake. Or there's something like, oh, now we see a way to make this better. That's a creative retake. And for a creative retake, there's a certain budget to do, because you'll pay the overseas studio more. It's like, we didn't think of this.
Right.
This is a new thing. But you'll do a take one, and then generally two or three weeks later, you'll get a take two back. And then you'll give a round of notes on that. And then you'll get a take three. And the take three, there's very little time to do any notes. Like, your take three is generally your last stage, and maybe you can eke through two or three very important things if they haven't been dealt with, but that's it. Or you have a few people locally in your shop that can do some revisions or whatever. You know, anyway, I'm getting real animation nerdy on this,
but
man.
That's good. People, you know, a lot of people from the animation world are like going to want to hear that. We have to talk about it. And I think one thing that I really want to get out there, man, that I think doesn't get out there enough is like Mike Mayfield.
Yeah.
He almost killed himself for the Midnight Gospel.
Yeah.
Like, you remember like how hard he was working? Do you remember that? And like
he gives a shit.
He does. And like, I will never forget the Prisoner episode where it's a time loop. And I, you know, flippantly, I don't know whose idea it was, but I remember it just sounded cool. We'll do a time loop episode. That'll be Groundhog's Day. It'll be fun and trippy. No one thought in animation how technical and difficult that was going to be to do a time loop. And I remember walking in to Mayfield and Penn's office, and he had this massive stack of paper that represented every part. He was like trying to order it, and the wild look in his eyes, like he was driving him mad, and
he was like, this is a mad scientist figuring it out.
And he figured it out.
You could give the directive, but then somebody's got to figure that shit out.
And
he was great at figuring.
Oh my god, I felt so bad.
You know, it was another one that doesn't, you might not notice it, but it was one of the most difficult things to pull off, was in the Meat World episode, the amorphous blob of meat that had to travel through the tubes. Yeah. That was really technically difficult.
Was it really?
Yeah. Cause it's a thing like, we only could have done it this way, where we had animators in house and gave them agency. Cause that would have required so much pre-design and planning for every stage of every mutation of the meat and the way that it traveled through the meat in three-dimensional space, but it was animated in a 2D method, would have been very hard to communicate to an outside studio. And I remember, I think Sean Glaze did those boards where it was going through the meat tubes. And he was like, man, I remember him coming to me, because he was like, this shit is going to be hard to do.
Yeah.
Like, can I do this? I'm like, do it, man. Like, this is our chance to fucking do something like this. There will never be another show where we could try to do shit like this.
Sean Glaze, what a brilliant dude. And that's the other thing Pendleton did, and you did, is assembled this elite team of animators.
Of animators who were also weirdos.
Weirdos. I didn't want to say it.
Because you could have had a bunch of super technical animators who were squares, which they exist. But we had the all-star weirdo team.
Man, I don't, you probably know this, but like, I don't have words to express how absolutely wild it was to get ushered in to Titmouse by Pendleton and suddenly to be around like wizards. You know what I mean? I've only seen stand up. And
sure,
I had no idea anything about it. And suddenly I'm surrounded by people like Sean Glaze, you, Pendleton, Jesse, and watching their process and the way that it works. And I just, some of my really fond memories of making that show are just walking through where people were animating and the feeling in the air, this electric feeling in the air, and watching all these great artists and the way they would listen to podcasts and they animate
and talk to themselves and act shit out like they're possessed.
Incredible. And again, I don't mean to keep leaning into this mystical metaphysical thing I'm trying to pin on everything, I guess, but I'm telling you, man, there were times when I was like, oh, it's a temple. I've never seen anything like this, but the only thing I've felt this kind of energy is inside of temples.
Yeah, it's weird, man. And it is something, it's funny, years ago when we started making this show, Metalocalypse, which maybe you know about.
Love it.
I was directing that with a good friend of mine, John Schnipp, who I'd known for years before, but I'd never worked with in that capacity. We had worked on small jobs or whatever. And he taught me so much in a way that I didn't know I needed to be taught, because this technical thing, this square thing that I was talking about before, when we were prepping for our episodes, like these D&D campaigns that I'm talking about, I wanted to be over-prepared.
Right.
I wanted to get an A, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to tell my animators everything through notes and equations and the way that you used to have to do this shit on these I'm like, well, he's going to put the box down in 8 frames and there's going to be an overshoot and a settle and all these antiquated animation terms that they figured out 100 years ago and have been passed down through apprenticeships and shit.
Wow.
It's like, this is a weird scene, right? But Schnipp, John Schnipp, this guy, he passed away in 2018. All right, I'm going to tell you a story. This is going to lead into a story.
Okay, great.
I was about to tell you earlier.
Oh,
I'm not going to tell you that we're on the podcast. So, he didn't do any prep, but he's a funny fucking person, right? He just had an energy about him.
Yeah.
And I handed out my scenes to the animators, and I gave him very specific instructions, right? And Schnipp just acted them out. And because he's funny, and because he's a compelling human being, they absorbed it. And then we did our dailies, which dailies is another thing that I think is essential in this. You watch the dailies, and everybody learns, you know. It's like you watch everybody else's scenes. You see what works. You see what doesn't. You see what mistakes are being made. You see what's getting complimented. And I was so smug going into those meetings. Mm-hmm. And then I had my ass handed to me in a way that was really helpful of like, Schnipp, shit is funnier. Because he was just being present and being a funny person in front of these animators. And they're not idiots. They don't need me to fucking spell out how many frames it is to make the arm move.
Right.
Like, just trust them.
Yes.
Give them what you think the essence of the scene is through acting it out or whatever method you deem is the way, and that's how you're going to get the best stuff. And that he was such a gem, and I'm so lucky to have worked with him for so many years.
Sorry for your loss.
And he passed away in 2018, and here's what happened. He passed away during one of the events that he was a high priest of, if you want to use a temple metaphor for the animation and art community. He passed away during San Diego Comic-Con, right?
Whoa.
And I think it was the best possible time because he was honored there. He wasn't physically there, but he missed it. And the date of his passing happened in the middle of San Diego Comic-Con, and then he ended up, everybody found out, and the word was passed around and this and that. And he was honored there. And then I think 2 weeks after San Diego Comic-Con, I came out to this property, right? And I was sitting in that room over there, looking out the window. I was sitting in that room over there, looking out the window to that energy circle I was pointing to you earlier. And it was that moment where you're like about to go to sleep, but you're not quite asleep.
Yeah.
and I saw a shimmering form appear to me in that energy circle. I saw it through the window physically, and it looked like an 80s special effect, like a slightly blue glow, like superimposed, like a dead Jedi from Star Wars kind of look. And it was John Schnepp.
Wow.
And he appeared to me in that circle. And I made eye contact with him, and he floated over to me, right? And he came up to me, and he said to me, "Repeat after me. Himble, scrimble, dimble, deem, wimble, dimble, do." Right? And then I repeated it exactly as it stated to him, and he crossed his arms and shook his head, no. And then he repeated another whimsical nonsense statement to me and said, "Repeat after me." And I did. And he did that maybe 8, maybe 10 times. And then I got hit. And when he said, "Repeat after me," I made up my own nonsense phrase. And then he crossed his arms, nodded his head, and floated away backwards. I'm getting chilled. I'm getting misty about
me
this.
Me too, man.
Because it was like him telling me, like, don't, like, do your own nonsense.
Yeah.
You know? Even when somebody says, "Repeat after me," don't repeat after them. You know, it was fucking magical. Even when somebody says, "Repeat after me," don't repeat after them. You know, it was fucking magical.
Oh my God, man. That was 2 weeks after he passed?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God, man. Well, two things come to mind with your story.
Yeah, yeah.
One, this documentary I saw on this.
And I've never seen a ghost before or after that.
Well, that's a pretty intense ghost experience. Yeah, yeah, that's as they say in Ghostbusters, that's a free-form floating apparition, baby. That's the real deal, man.
And it wasn't that time where you're in that moment of that really, like, weird, like, almost lucid dream of about to fall asleep, so who knows?
Were you scared?
No, not one bit.
So the vibe was good?
The vibe was incredibly good. I was so happy to see him.
Well, in Tibetan Buddhism, you stay, so there's the bardo. You're in there for, I can't remember how many, 39 days.
Yeah, yeah.
So fully within that metaphysical system, 100%, that's a possibility.
Yeah, yeah.
But only, but based on what happened, that is only the kind of thing that people who have like really good karma have really prepared for their transition can do, because most people they run screaming through the bardo, whereas he sounds like
he lived in the Schnepp zone, as we would call it.
And so he was
prepared, not in a way that was practiced, in a way that was felt.
He visit any other people?
He did his fiance Holly, but that was primarily through dreams, not through like a waking experience.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's the zone. Because, you know, in dreams, you either go into your mind or you go into the astral realm, I think. And like if you go in the astral realm or whatever you want to call it, that's where you're going to get to see people who are still like deciding what they want to do for their next birth.
Yeah, yeah.
That is such a wild story, man.
Yeah. It's crazy.
And I wish I could remember his name. He's a famous Buddhist painter, and he would finish all of his masterpieces on like moon cycles. So he'd finish them on the full moon, and then the parallel, he died on the full moon.
Somebody started their skill saw. Could you hear it on the mic?
Yeah, but no. Okay, let me tell you why I'm disappointed in myself. Here's why I'm disappointed.
Yeah.
Because this is something that if I ever achieve like Elon Musk level wealth, I'm going to do all kinds of scientific stuff. I'm going to fund research.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I know, my hypothesis is, I don't know, it's a hypothesis, that I could predict that some kind of electrical, like a skill saw, generally a leaf blower, will appear Ooh. The moment you start podcasting.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what the implications of that are, but because I went through a period where it started driving me crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would get really mad. And then I realized, oh, this is built into the universe somehow with podcasts. Yeah, if you're gonna do things like this outside, the leaf blower is good. I mean, to the point where like I will hit like record, start the interview. This happened to me recently. Usually what happens, this does fit the pattern, is a poignant moment is happening in the podcast.
And I'm sorry, you were about to go on some really probably good thread.
No, there comes the saw. No, I'm glad you did. Because you just told the most beautiful, intense ghost story I've ever heard. And I'm just trying to like say anything. I can't, there's nothing I can follow that with. So I'm rambling about it. And then the universe is like, do the skill saw. The DM running this thing is like, let's roll for skill saw.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, if you roll over 18, no skill saw. You're definitely getting a fucking skill saw. Usually it's a leaf blower though. I mean, like right now, if an unannounced landscaper came walking down your path with a leaf blower, you would see me not blink or
flinch.
That
would be amazing because we don't have landscapers here.
We don't. This at my house. We had a landscaper who wasn't there for weeks and weeks. And right in this beautiful moment in a podcast, directly next to the window of my podcast studio, in this perfect moment, just starts up. I don't know what that is, but. Yeah, like people, the Comic-Con thing, it reminds me of that. It's like the great artists, they I'm not saying they consciously choose necessarily, but they're so in sync with the rhythm of whatever their craft is that their life, you know, follows that rhythm. And, you know, I don't think people who aren't like us understand what Comic-Con is like. It's, you know, I don't think they realize that's an incredible event, man. And like,
dude, can I tell you how great Comic-Con was this past year?
Please. I'm so
because you know what happened? It's something that hasn't happened, I don't know, what did they say, in 50 years or something? I don't know. I'm gonna fact check me after this podcast. Okay. But when's the last time there was a WGA strike and a SAG strike at the same time?
It's been a really long time.
And you know what happened? That happened at Comic-Con this year. And you know what I did? You know what I normally do at Comic-Con? I do a lot of schmoozy meetings with Hollywood executives.
Right.
I used to enjoy the art, but I've become such a businessman with this animation studio that I have to maximize my time and be efficient and have a lot of meetings during Comic-Con. This year, I just hung out with artists the whole time because when there's no writers, there's no show creators, there's no actors at Comic-Con, then the Hollywood folks don't feel the need to come to, I guess I'm technically a Hollywood person, even though I don't consider myself to be one.
Yeah.
But I just got to hang out with artist friends and it was great. It was so good.
my God, man, I got to go to Comic-Con for Crapopolis and like, experience it, and just like there is just nothing I can think of more fun than like artists going full bore into all kinds of things. We ended up in my hotel room at 5 a.m. Aaron and I playing Snap. I can't remember her name, she's an actress. Fully dressed as a vampire.
Yeah, yeah.
And like good. Like this was like
they're not joking around with their vampire.
I was
costume.
So high that I started thinking, are we sure that she's an artist? Like, cause are we sure she's an actor? Like, cause if vampires are gonna
maybe
show
gonna
up,
come bite your neck and you'll be, you know, you're gonna be in her servitude for the rest of eternity.
It felt like that because she was like so much like a vampire because she's a good actor. She was still she's in that role and not acting like hokey Dracula shit, but just like, my God, is this a vampire? Is this how they get you? Like they come to Comic-Con.
That's probably how they get you.
Because you like
did you invite her into your hotel room?
You better believe we did.
Oh, big mistake.
We definitely invited her in. She's cool, man. But like the because like Comic-Con.
She comes through the door or the window.
Yeah, I don't remember, man. He was just there all of a sudden, dude. I don't remember. She was just there. But like if I'm some kind of ethereal supernatural being and I want to be out in public, Comic-Con's where I'm going because no one's going to like blink.
Dude, this is what happened to me when I was in college. I went to school in New York, the School of Visual Arts.
Okay. Right?
And I did a lot of acid during that time.
Right? Yes.
And I lived in a weird, like kind of shitty, it wasn't shitty. It was a weird experience. I lived in an apartment building in Jersey City that was made for Wall Street execs to live in and commute, like take the PATH train right across we were directly across from the World Trade Center, which was still existing in this time because it was in the 90s. But they built it too early. No Wall Street guys wanted to live there. So the apartments were dirt cheap and they were way nicer apartments that we had any business living in when we were in our teens and 20s, right? But I'm getting off point. One day when I was like having a really heavy acid trip, I used to buy from this guy Bigfoot in Central Park, and it was the good shit. It was like fucking one tab, 30 hours.
Okay, let me ask one question real quick.
Yeah.
Is that what has informed the Bigfoot theme? Is that what is why you have Bigfoot?
I mean, it was one of the, that was probably a backwards path, like we were talking about, a backwards time loop.
Okay,
but
go ahead.
I think it was more In Search Of.
Okay, keep going.
Or The Legend of Boggy Creek.
yes.
But I was sitting on a bench with my friend, and we were watching, two buildings talk to each other or whatever was happening. And a woman, a person that we went to school with who we referred to as the witch. This is where it's coming back to the vampire thing. And was she a real witch or not? Came up, and she was a very, in art school in the 90s, there was a lot of like goth women. And
I imagine.
She was like, started talking to us, and then she clocked it like immediately. She's like, "You guys are tripping, right?" And we're like, "Oh." She's like, "Come with me." And she brought us back to her apartment and then brought us back into her back room. And then she brought out a motherfucking cauldron. And we were like, we were like, when you were that tripping on acid and this girl that you referred to as the witch then brings you into her room and brings out a cauldron. Are you like, is she a real witch?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So then she brought, and it was one of the most intense acid experience I've ever had. She was an incredible guide. She brought out a geode and she started chanting and putting on this fucking Jim Morrison music in the background or whatever. And this fucking smoke started coming out of the cauldron and around this geode. And she was like, look into the geode. And I went and traveled down into the geode. And I remember I was driving around in a little geode car, in a little geode city, and
wow.
I was looking up around me, and I could see myself in the sky, which was comforting, like my giant head in the sky looking down at me in the geode thing. And then I would get up and go to work in my geode car to my geode job and do my like geode office job and like come home and like go to sleep. And I lived a little lifetime in that geode. And then, at some point just got sucked up back into like the real, supposedly real world. And then I was like, what?
Wow.
I don't live in a geode.
Yeah.
Like what happened? I just lived a whole lifetime in a geode. And, it was the witch, man.
What's your theory on that? What do you think happened there? What is that?
Man, I don't know. I don't have a theory. Damn, do I have to have a theory?
Yeah.
I didn't make up a theory. I didn't
about
a theory.
Like I've heard.
I think she was. I think first of all, that fucking Bigfoot had the best acid in New York.
Well, okay, we know that for sure.
Yeah.
You found some real LSD.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's for sure. And the LSD was so powerful, it summoned a witch. Because
that's how you know
you got the good shit. Because
if
you have the good shit, it's not just like the walls are breathing.
Yeah,
it summons beings to you as though they've just been waiting for you.
Yeah.
Like they sense the warp in time space and were drawn to it.
Yeah, could be.
And then brought you back to
some other dimension. Who knows what?
Well, this is a.
But I remember the experience where it could have been scary. That trip never went down the wrong path. I've been on ones that went down the wrong path. And that one, the comforting thing was there's always this manifestation of myself as a giant ass face in the sky. Anytime I looked up in the sky, it was like the sun or clouds like smiling down at me and having a good time. And I'm like, well, this is, you know, this is the way it is now.
Yeah, you fractalize, yeah. Man. Yeah. As above, so below. You experience the what is, yeah. I only wonder about stuff like I've heard about this trip before. I've never had the live a different life trip, but one of my friends on Salvia said that he lived an entire lifetime.
Yeah, yeah.
And then came out of it and had to like react.
It is disorienting when you come out of it initially. You're like, none of that happened, you know, or maybe it did.
It did.
But you're like, I'm here now and that's not happening now.
Right. Well, that is the, you know, it makes me think of what you said about Majadu. It's this is the aura.
Yeah,
this is like
you're
seeing like your karmic tendency. Yeah. Like, you know, that's what determines your next
life. My karmic tendency is to go to work at an office job every day.
In a fucking geode.
In a geode.
That's cool.
I had a geocard. It was purple.
Man, that is so wild. That is so wild. Dude, let me see what time. Oh, we're doing a time here.
Hold on. What is this? I don't know how this works. You tell me.
We can just keep going,
man. I got until 4 o'clock. You can edit this. Do whatever you want.
Right, we got plenty of time.
Yeah.
So have you heard about the new studies they're doing with DMT? Have you heard about this?
Something tells me I'm not as up to speed as you are on this.
They're doing the same thing they do with anesthesia, but with DMT.
Yeah.
So you get a certain amount in the blood, keep that level up so that now you can extend the DMT trip, as in the smoking DMT. When people hear about this, they're like, well, that's ayahuasca. It's like, no, ayahuasca it just means brew. Yeah. And depending on whatever the shaman mixes up, it's very different. This is pure DMT into your blood, kept at a certain level, which is the breakthrough level, extended for like an hour.
Yeah.
And so they're doing this study because they're interested in why is it with DMT that people kind of experience the same things, see the same things, talk about the same entities? That's really weird. Like, and with most psychedelics, we do report similar experiences because it's purely subjective. How do you really study that out? You know, it's very difficult to study for so many different reasons. What kind of LSD you've been given, the dosage you've been given, set and setting, all that stuff. So this is like dialing everything into a specific set and setting, a specific amount of DMT, a specific amount of time, because they're interested in like, what is that zone? Is it real? Is it subjectively just built into all human beings? There's some alternate circus reality with, you know, and it's real. People see letters in there, like in language, like, is that a real language?
Yeah.
Can we get them to articulate the language and have people like, see if we can like draw it out?
Yeah.
And then what I read is,
tell me what
last
you read.
Little bit.
Yeah.
Entities show up.
Yeah.
Right around the 10 minute mark.
Yeah. They're the little guys, right? They're I've heard about them.
They have different forms, blobs, you know, but it's the 10 minute mark. These entities show up. Apparently they're interested in the study. They're like, okay, well, maybe, but what? So, you know, when I hear your story about the geode and I hear my friend's story about going into an alternate lifetime, and all the DMT stories, like I just marvel at the possibility that we are living in a multiverse, that we are living in a world.
Those guys that those DMT, what are they? There's a name for them. I fucking forget it.
Well, McKenna called them self-transforming machine elves. Machine elves.
Machine elves. That's what I'm thinking of. The machine elves are the same thing that like fairies and gnomes and all these things have been. I'm bringing this back to D&D, man.
Let's do it.
It's like I've lived multiple lifetimes in the world of D&D.
Yes.
And I interact with the fairies and the gnomes and the machine elves in there. And who's to say that that's not as real as any of this other shit?
Yeah.
Because when you're in it, man, when you're in the zone of that shit, when you talk about your experiences, I've had that experience of like talking about a D&D game with somebody else who's been in that D&D game with a third party who doesn't know what you're talking about and being really confused as the to the experiences that you're describing, because they couldn't have happened in real life.
Right.
Let you, yet you're both talking about them as if they've happened, and that can't happen with a dream, right?
Right.
Your dreams are singular. I mean, maybe, I mean, they're, who knows? Maybe you do. It's very rare that two people remember the same dream they've been in
very
together,
rare.
Right? So, yeah, man, it's a construct to fucking bring those machine elves out on this very table that we're doing this podcast, and it's going to happen this weekend.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. I'm glad you're saying it out loud, man, because it's true.
Yeah,
true. It's more. Yeah. There's more going on there than what meets the eye, and you can't know it until you're in it and committed to it. Not to mention the attachment you get. Like, in the same way, we are attached to the characters that we're LARPing as right now.
Yeah,
you get as attached to your character
exactly.
in D&D, and it's heavy.
Our soul is playing our guys right now. It's like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to have Duncan come over to this place. We don't know what exactly is going to happen, but we'll make him sit here and bullshit, and maybe we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Our souls are getting amusement out of our fucking interaction
that's
happening
it.
Right now.
It's all the way through, man. And this is actually a question I wanted to ask you earlier on, but I think this is a good place to ask it.
Yeah.
So, and again, like, I don't know why I lurk on D&D forums and read like posts and on Reddit, or I'll watch YouTube videos of campaigns. But people, like, they bitch about the Dungeon Master. Like, there's a kind of brutality involved in being a Dungeon Master, because like, you have to kill characters that some people have been playing with for years.
For sure.
Have you ever done that?
You know, it's part of it. I feel like there's the shades of that, though, right? There's a benevolent god and a one that is less benevolent, you know, and as the DM, you're essentially being the god of the game.
Yes.
Right? You're the prime mover of the scenario, right? If you decide there's going to be a lightning storm and the earth is going to crack open and demons are coming out, it's going to happen. If you decide at the moment of someone's character that they've been playing for 7 years is about to get slayed, that an angelic force comes and like strikes the demon who is about to strike their character down at the last moment, gives them a second chance, that's also in your power. So, you know, you never want to game the system so much that your players feel that there's a term that is frowned upon in Dungeons & Dragons, is you put the game on rails, right? Which means you don't give the players agency to decide their own fate, that you, as the prime mover, are pushing them through the reality that you want them to experience. So like the fucking God of Abraham, right? It's like he gave his Adam and Eve free will, right? To eat the apple or whatever. They did. I went to Catholic high school, but I can not remember most of my shit.
Yeah. Fruit, forbidden fruit.
Whatever it is. They say it's an apple.
Apparently, tree of the
that's
knowledge
a
of
mistranslation,
good and evil.
Right? So you got to give them that apple and the snake and all that shit, but you can't tell them what to do. You could tell them, but you can't make them do it.
Right.
As the Dungeon Master, right? You, as the prime mover, got to give them the scenario. You got to build them the Garden of Eden. But that's their decision whether they're going to stay there or not, man.
Yes, that's right. You got to kick them out.
Yeah,
Dude, that's wild. Yeah. So, if you get like some kind of like fascist dungeon master, you start getting the sense that you're not in an open world RPG.
Yeah. You know, it's just a different, you know, there's as many ways of play as people can imagine. You know, that's the best thing about that game. It's so open to interpretation. Do you know what rule zero is?
No.
Rule zero is the prime directive. I think I've used that like three times.
I like this it.
It's the prime directive of Dungeons & Dragons. Rule zero is no matter what rule is in any of these books, you can disregard it and make up your own rules. It's like whatever these books, don't use them as scripture. Don't use them as, you know, this is an unmovable object. This is not carved in stone. These are made up by a bunch of weird, you know, fantasy nerds. Like, do what you need to make your table work. And that's the way it is, man. And some people forget rule zero and they go by the book. And you have another term that's called like a rules lawyer, right? That's like, like a player who will challenge the DM and be like, hey man, it says here that this guy has this many hit points or whatever. You know, there's a back and forth on that. Maybe there's sometimes it's good to have somebody challenging the DM,
yeah,
or whatever. You know, you need to have, you're like Satan leading the angel revolt against God sometimes, right?
Yeah.
You know, but you know,
it's not gonna work out.
Yeah, yeah, maybe not work.
It doesn't work
sometimes
out.
Sometimes you could convince the DM. I don't know.
Yeah, is that considered okay? So like, if we're in a campaign,
yeah,
and yeah, something happens where I'm like, no, 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 no. That should have been like a 10-sided dice, not a 6-sided dice,
yeah, yeah,
or some shit like, yeah, that.
Yeah.
Is it like, so if I like speak up,
yeah,
do other players go, oh fuck?
I mean, it depends on your table, right? And if you have a more like square DM, I think he'll, I don't know. It really depends. Cause the square DM would probably be like, you're absolutely right. My mistake. That was supposed to be a 10-sided die. And your more like free flowing DM might be like, hey man, it's like whatever die it feels like it should be.
You know? Yes.
Like, I've got a game mechanic for this game, right? When they play when they start playing the psychedelic beast, which they're going to run into in the end, I filled a gumball machine with a bunch of
different
dice.
Wait, hold on. This might come out this week.
Oh, all right.
You know what?
Mechanic won't ruin the story.
Okay,
though.
So if someone hears
if they end up hearing it, it's
okay,
fine.
Okay.
So thank you, though.
Yeah,
that
sure.
That was very considerate
to
protect the gameplay. But, it's a gumball machine that's filled with all different types of dice. And the idea is this psychedelic beast is so chaotic that when you roll the damage, you put a quarter in the gumball machine and turn it, and whatever dice come out, that's what is rolled for the damage.
Wait, you literally have a gumball machine?
I have a gumball machine in the other room.
What?
I'll show it to you after this.
Dude, that's so fucking cool. That's going to be so fun.
Yeah, it's real dumb.
God, but terrifying. The sound of that thing turning.
You don't know.
Holy,
it's real mechanical, too. It makes that chunk-a-tunk-a-tunk sound. You know?
That is so... Wow, that's so badass. Ma'am, what are the, like, minimum, like if you so if like if I wanted to just attempt to like start a campaign with a bunch of comics, what are the minimum requirements that I need to start a campaign?
Comics are going
to
be great, especially improv comics, as long as they're in it. Here's what I think sometimes it fails when I played with a lot of comics, obviously.
Yeah,
we work with a lot of comics, and it's like you have to just be in it. Don't try to be selling a bit. Like, experience it. Feel like this is your character.
Right.
And do things that are true to your character like you would in a true improv scenario.
Right.
And don't try to sell bits into the thing, you know?
I get it.
Because if you try to sell bits, then it becomes a different thing. But if you feel like you're true to your character, anybody who's done a lot of improv is always great at this shit.
Right.
It's so good. Because it's essentially improv with, like, a little bit of rules. That's basic, and some fighting and some killing,
right? You know? And magic items
and magic,
So, but what, like, what? So,
but I'd say, just set up a. I mean, it could be the simplest thing. I mean, if you want to ease people in, get something that's already written. You don't have to go, like, and it's free on. You can find a million things free online. Something you do in a day.
But do you need the Dungeon Master's Guide, or what do you need, like, Monster Manual?
Here's the thing. Here's what I'll say. That shit is available online for a price if you want to pay the price. And, you know, for anybody who doesn't want to dig in, these resources are also available. Like anything, I'm sure you can go on some pirate site and find episodes of Midnight Gospel for free if you don't want to pay for Netflix.
Yeah, I hope so.
But, you know, if you don't want to pay for D&D Beyond, which has a monthly subscription, there are other ways that are a Google search away.
I want the books, though, man. I think I'd feel
weird. Well, physical books are cool, and I love the physical books. Although, I have to say, in this modern age, it's almost irresistible to not use the digital version, because I'll tell you what the digital version does for you.
What?
The math.
Oh.
And it's, if you've had a few tequilas, and it's like, what do I roll? And what is my strength bonus?
Yeah.
Is it plus +2? How's this weapon work?
Yeah.
If you push a button on the app and it's like, doodly-doo, it does it for you. You can still roll the dice for some stuff if you want to, but there's something really convenient about the You know, I mean, they really crack something with that. There's a reason why in the last 5 years that D&D stuff has really grown in popularity amongst people that I never thought would be into it. A lot of like younger, less nerdy people who I feel like are into D&D. I'm always surprised when, you know, somebody who's like, you know, I never would have clocked as like a D&D nerd is super into that stuff. And it's growing in a way, because I think it, and I think the pandemic did help that growth, because it was something you could experience online together that felt like you were living another life, and you could experience things. You're living all day in your house and you're not interacting with people. It's hard to really psychologically truly put yourself back into that mindset that we were in, like in the summer of 2020, when we're like, is this what the world is going to be like forever?
Yeah. You know?
And that was a true escape that brought you to another plane of existence that was another reality. And I think it was super attractive to people who had never experienced that before, and they were ready for it.
You know,
D&D grew considerably during that time.
You know, the plane of reality I miss?
What is
being a titmouse. I want to go back. I miss it. Oh, I want my badge. Well, I want to do it again. It was so fun.
Come visit something. Well, you can come over here anytime. This is like a mini titmouse.
Thank you. I'm going to take you up on it. My kids are going to flip. This is like paradise for my boys.
Yeah, man.
Thank you so much. Oh, I really, thank you, really this enjoyed this chat. Thank you. And
I love this. This was so easy. I can't believe how fast. This probably everybody tells this. It goes by so fast.
It goes by too fast. Yeah. You got anything you want to? I mean, I'm like, do you have anything you want to plug? Anything? What's happening over at Titmouse? What should we be watching?
You know what I want to plug? It's going to be a little late, probably, but you can still watch it. It'll help. The show that is currently in the process of, you know, the streaming drops.
Yeah.
It's on Max. It used to be called HBO Max.
Okay.
But now it's just called Max. And it's After Midnight Gospel, the show that I think I'm the most proud of for being innovative and free and true. It's called Scavenger's Reign.
Okay.
And it is a adult sci-fi drama. It's about a group of characters who've been stranded on a fantastic alien planet, where they have to interact with all the alien flora and fauna and try and figure out their way through this existence. Cool. And it's a show that I don't think anyone would make now, but in this streaming boom right before the pandemic, we somehow got this show greenlit, and it's super trippy and weird, and I think you'll dig it. You should check it out.
Watching it tonight.
Max. And the first is a 12-episode season. The first three drops have happened. They dropped 3 episodes per drop for 4 weeks.
Cool.
And this Thursday night, which I'm not sure
it'll be out.
Gonna make it. It'll be out Thursday. Maybe it's tonight. If you happen to be listening to this on Thursday, you can watch the last three. That's the finale. But you can always, it's streaming, man. You could pick it up and watch it whenever you want. And they count all those views, man, whoever's watching it, because this is a real flyer. I could plug Big Mouth. I could plug Star Trek Lower Decks. They don't need my help.
Right.
They're operating great.
Yeah.
Everybody's watching those shows.
Yeah.
The Scavenger's Reign really needs it.
Scavenger's Reign. Yeah. Everyone, flood Max.
Max.
Watch it tonight. I'm watching it tonight. I am. That sounds right up my alley.
Right on. It is right up your alley, dude.
Hare Krishna. Thank you so much.
Thank you, dude.
That was Chris Panosky. Everybody, won't you please watch Scavenger's Reign tonight? It's real good. And I'm not just saying that because I'm friends with Chris. It's freaking cool. Also, a huge thank you to our sponsors, Wise Guys, Extra Show. I have diabetes, massive penis. Also, I'm like freaking beautiful. That's the other thing the doctor told me at urgent care. He was like, I want to really help you, man, but like I'm just smitten right now. Like I know you're married. I see the ring, but I just love you. Like I feel in love with you on every level. It was a weird connection for sure. But yeah, we're doing monogamy now. So I barely did anything with him. We're going to be back later on this week. I'll see you then. Hare Krishna.